Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle. So I watched Iron Sky last night.
And what'd you think?
It was okay, not great.
Yeah, you let me borrow it, you know, and so I watched it. And
a dimly glowing review.
I don't know. I had heard, like, a review other places. Not, like, an in-depth review, but the verdict was it kind of didn't do enough. You know, some parts were funny, but it didn't really push the humor enough to be that good of a movie. Yeah, I see what they mean.
He was trying to be this generation's Doctor Strangelove, I guess.
What was it supposed to be, a comedy?
Yeah, a satire, I would say.
Okay. Yeah. It was enough of a comedy movie where you say, yep, they intended that to be a comedy. And parts were funny. I enjoyed the Sarah Palin caricature of the American president.
Cool. And
apparently I ended that conversation.
All right.
Sarah Palin ends any conversation.
All
right. Oh, actually, hey, I got a finally saw. I finally saw the end of Lost, only 4 years too late.
Oh, well, that's fine. I haven't seen it. I don't really watch the show.
Wow, it was horrible. Horrible ending.
What are you guys talking about?
Lost. I finally saw the ending.
Oh, way to keep this episode real topical.
To be fair, Chris did say it was a finally saw.
Exactly.
Yeah. Did Gilligan ever get off the island? So in this episode, we're going to do another installment of Rogues, and we've chosen Hackers. And we had a little bit of debate as to what would constitute a hacker. I was a little bit surprised that there was a debate.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, we're going to have a debate on that.
Sorry, you know me, I like to split hairs.
So I think we agreed upon the definition as what we're going to be classifying as a hacker in this episode is kind of a computer criminal or rogue. So like our other rogues episode, what we're going to do is ask some questions. What is it? Why did they do it? And how did they do it? So what is hacking, guys?
Well, in general, it's using a computer or technology or some kind of a system and either breaking that system or breaking into it in order to do stuff like steal information for spying or blackmail, thrill-seeking, just to learn about that system or activism, or in this case, hacktivism, as it were. Yes.
Yeah, it kind of gets into why, and I guess it is kind of difficult to separate, you know, why from what it is sometimes. But like the definition I kind of came up with or saw was that someone who focuses on the security mechanisms of computers and network systems. I don't know, I thought that was pretty decent because it's kind of neutral. But it still says what hacking is.
Yeah.
All right, let's start with what it is and what it was. So when was hacking first coined, or that term first coined?
I believe the first time that hacker was used in the mainstream media, meaning kind of like a computer criminal, was in 1983. And what happened was there was kind of a hacker group called the 414s, and they broke into a bunch of computer systems across the US and Canada, and that sparked, you know, like a big mass media frenzy. The spokesperson, who was only 17 at the time, Neil Patrick, got his face on the cover of Newsweek as part of a cover story. And then he actually testified before the House of Representatives. And his testimony led to a whole bunch of, you know, computer hacking laws. And because of the big publicity of that, hacker now pretty much means, at least in mainstream media, computer criminal, where, you know, people in the community could argue that it has other meanings. But, you know, because of that, that's sort of why, you know, we see hackers as being these, you know, shadowy cyber criminals.
What about the phone freaks of the 70s and 80s, like Captain Crunch and Whistler?
Right.
where they used, I think it was the Whistler had like perfect pitch, and then Captain Crunch had like
a whistle from a Captain Crunch box?
Yes.
Which could be the reason for his nickname.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a good point. And yeah, they could probably, not probably, they would be considered hackers as well. I think, obviously that was before computers. So I was going to say it sounds kind of rude, but we've probably not forgotten about them, but they maybe get pushed aside because computers are so prevalent now where, kind of phones, at least in the non-smartphone variety, aren't.
But I'm going to disagree there in that I know we said about a computer criminal or a computer rogue, but phones are a network. And really, it's some of what hackers do, or a lot of what hackers do, is about like on that computer or on that individual system. But a lot of it's on some sort of network.
That's true.
Yeah, when you get to that level of technology, the definition of computer does get a little bit fuzzy because the phones, they used specific dial tones in specific ranges. Again, that's why his whistling, his perfect pitch, perfect whistling, was able to crack the system. I mean, that kind of works like a computer. It uses commands sent across the wire to tell phone rates and charges and things. So yeah,
absolutely. And yeah, I don't disagree. I just think it would be very, what's the word I'm looking for? Period. I think period piece. Like, if you were playing in, like, the 60s or 70s, then, yeah, that's what your hacking would be. Probably into the 80s, too. But then, it starts to go over to computers. And
and what an exciting campaign that is. Free long-distance calls!
Hey, well, no, actually, that could be kind of... Well, all right, maybe not interesting, but...
I could see like a Mad Men kind of a game where the phone company is coming after you for making the free calls in the first place. But yeah, but no, it's the more technology there is, the more interesting the hacker genre becomes, I reckon.
I'm going to disagree again, but we'll hold that thought until later.
Because that's what you do.
And I wasn't the one arguing over email after email about the definition either.
I gave it up after two.
No, but I think people kind of keep an open mind, like, and keep those phone freaks in mind when we introduce some different ways that you incorporate hacking into your game later in the episode, then I think it'll become a lot easier.
No, I agree. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so my first exposure to hacking, which is not part of the history of hacking, I guess not history, was War Games.
It's part of history, just not, the history of hacking, yeah.
Was the movie War Games?
Which came out in...
In the 80s?
Yeah, I think it was 83. And I think it was it? I think it was War Games combined with the 414 that kind of helped spread that hacker as a negative stereotype. So, sorry to interrupt.
That kind of was really interesting and very scary. Especially with the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
And what they can get control of. So that leads into just what the hacker does. So it's all about, primary thing is about taking information, or if you watch War Games, in a sense, he didn't really control that computer, but there's also that the remote access to a computer.
Mm-hmm.
We hear about that, like, what is it, I don't know if it's an urban legend or not, but the Chinese hackers hacking into computers with cameras installed and then just spying on people.
Mm-hmm.
So spying, information, blackmail, theft.
Lots and lots of theft.
Yeah, but again, I think it kind of all boils down to information.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, stealing, spying on people. It's all kind of a form of information, whether it's getting somebody's, credit card number or key logging or, email address so you can then, spam a whole bunch of people. Or even if it's, I guess, quasi-legitimate, surveillance of monitoring where people go so companies can, build a consumer profile.
All right, so that's what it is. Why do people do it?
Sorry, I might sound repetitive here, but I think money is one of the primary things. Of course, when we get into these rogues episodes, that's going to be a common theme, huh?
Yeah, rogues like money.
No, but I mean, there's a lot of different kinds of people who do hacking. And like you said, Wayne, a lot of them are in it just to test out security. And some of them do it. They call themselves white hat hackers. They actually try and break into systems to help people, to test other websites and then point out to them what their security flaws are so that they can fix them, or to create better kinds of antivirus software. There's gray hats who are in it just for information, or they kind of straddle the line between the good and the bad. And then, of course, black hats who are more malicious hackers. They go in to destroy stuff for the lulls, as it were, and or steal money.
Yeah, like maybe I'm wrong, and you guys are, of course, as always, free to disagree. But I think hacking is one of the kind of crimes in that we'll discuss in the Rogue series, where it might just be for the thrill of it, or, you know, committing the crime for the thrill of it could be a big motivator compared to other crimes. And looking at some of the sentences that people get, you know, if you get caught, you get slapped with a pretty hefty fine or actually do jail time. But as you said, Chris, for gray hats and black hat type hackers, it might just be the thrill of saying you broke into a secure system. You know?
Well, yes and no. I might disagree a little bit. I think that there's an enormous contingent, especially in China and Russia, of cyber mafias, and it's cybercrime is the biggest, is huge and growing bigger every year. So I don't want to minimize that. But you're absolutely right. The importance of, I guess, face or how famous you are as a hacker is very important to lots of hackers. You know, there's this hacker run forums where they point out what sites they've cracked recently and how big of a bust they did or how big of a site they were able to take down. So that kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Fame is very important among the hacker community. So it is a driving motivator for a lot, but I still think that that money is the big thing.
Oh, fair enough. I wasn't trying to say it was the biggest or it was like the only motivator, but I mean, compared to like becoming a black marketeer, you know.
It's a finer line, hey.
Yeah.
Well, there used to be a pretty big distinction between hackers and crackers, and crackers were what people used to call black hats. They would try and actually break systems, whereas hackers were more out for information, though the words have really kind of lost their meanings. Hacker is now a catch-all term for everything.
Right.
Well, with information theft being so prevalent, I guess it makes the distinction even harder because people know what you can do when you steal the information.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite like that Sandra Bullock movie. I think it came out in maybe the 90s.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, The Net. I remember that.
Yeah, that was it.
Terrible.
Where they can completely control a person's life with the access and that?
I don't think I actually saw that. Not
neither did I.
Yeah, don't bother.
It's kind of like that movie with Sandra Bullock that I vaguely heard about. and I just know that no one's going to go out and watch it and prove me wrong. Well, I was thinking also there's the hacktivists.
Right.
And thinking of Anonymous in particular. Mm-hmm. Where they've exposed some people who were like beyond trolls on 4chan, I believe.
Hmm. Yeah.
And also, I mean, sometimes it was like a little bit like what Wayne is talking about, like just for the fun of it, where like I think it was a security company said that their stuff couldn't be hacked, so they hacked their stuff.
Right.
They actually hacked the company as opposed to not only their programs.
Hmm.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There is a lot of that, especially with the anonymity of the net. I mean, it's a kind of troublemaking that young people can get into that's not really hard if you have if you find some nice scripts and programs for it. And yeah, it's really hard to be caught. And even if you are caught, if you've done it, say, in another country, then there's not really much that they can do to come after you.
There's also the internet vigilantism, mm-hmm. which you don't necessarily need to be a hacker to do, but it certainly helps. And that's when, you know, you see the woman stepping on that cat or dog and killing it, and then this was in China, and then people finding out her identities. I think there's something in Korea where a woman wouldn't clean up poop, and they had the camera, and they were able to track her down and then expose all her information online.
You mean like from, wow. like her pet went to the bathroom on the sidewalk and was caught by a security camera, and so people like tracked her down and got her information?
Yeah.
Well,
she just left it there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it just, you know, kind of emphasizes, like, you're not true. I mean, we're no longer living in a private world.
Right.
Mm-hmm. There's no true privacy anymore.
Yeah. Or the only way to be private is to not be on the network.
Well, even there, I mean, well, I guess some of her information is on there, but.
Yeah.
But there she's out letting her dog poop everywhere. And the camera picks it up somehow. And then they track her down.
Yeah, kind of scary.
Yeah, so there's definitely a few motivations there. And I guess with the white hat, you could play up the taking down the evil corporation. Hey, we haven't had a Star Wars example for maybe an episode.
Wow, has it been that long of a gap? Oh, is that what Star Wars withdrawal feels like?
But you know, when they say like many agents have to die to get these Death Star plans, and you know, maybe they just died from too many energy drinks.
Or something. Too many Cheetos.
All those bobbins, their heart exploded from all the caffeine, from all the Star Wars Red Bull pumping through their system. Right.
They forgot how to use their legs.
Oh, jeez.
That's pretty bad.
You just killed me. That was great.
Kind of takes the whole thing down a notch, doesn't it? It's a lot.
Many Bothans died horribly, horribly for this information.
But then let's go a little darker with the black hats and, you know, the kind of information they could be stealing. And we were kind of saying, you know, fame or money. But we also know that there's a very, very dark world online. And, you know, the kind of stuff that they, I mean, what we see, I guess we'll say a more benign or a less unsavory, where they hack into celebrities' accounts and then take their nude photos. Now, these are adult celebrities, so.
Mm-hmm.
We hope.
In some cases.
It happens all the time. Mm-hmm. So there's that as well, but of course that can be used as blackmail, and that so much stuff's kept online now. So.
Mm-hmm.
Who uses a regular camera?
No, that's a good point. And even if they're not, like, searching for information, like, one of the categories of malware, you know, malicious software, is actually ransomware, where if this, you know, ransomware gets on your computer through like a virus or a worm, it encrypts important files or necessary files for the operation of the computer, and then flashes up a message, you know, saying, oh, you know, you have to go here and buy this software or transfer this money to this account, and then we'll send you the encryption key and your computer will go back to normal. So it doesn't even really have to be photos or things like that that they're stealing. They just kind of can remotely hold your computer for ransom. And as you said, as more, you know, people are putting more and more information on their computer, the computer becomes, you know, more and more valuable and important. So,
yeah. Yep. A lot of evil to be done. Yeah. Of course, there's also a lot of positive things that can be done with hacking. You know, it does rely on breaking into other people's systems, so it's hard to be above the board when you're doing it. But as we mentioned with white hats, there's the reasons behind doing these things can be noble in and of themselves. So just so that you don't have to end up playing a criminal in every game if you want to be a hacker.
Yeah, that's true. However, because this is like, you know, a rogues episode, I don't know, I think it might be kind of, not boring, but, okay, boring to play a white hat, because white hats generally don't do anything illegal. You know, that's why they're white hats, where I think it would be more interesting to play, you know, a gray hat, you know, a gray character, where they have good intentions, but they're not going to let legal procedure get in the way of doing that good.
Yeah.
Where it's almost like gray hats are almost, or could be looked at as like internet mercenaries, you know. Someone could hire them to do something, and it doesn't really matter if it's legal or illegal or the channels they use to get it. But
yeah, I think that's kind of black hat there.
Well, but okay, yeah, fair enough. But like,
well, I'm going to take the third perspective.
Okay.
I think if you use like Chris's motivations idea, it's like it doesn't really, I mean, what a hacker does, everything is illegal.
It's yeah, just, I wanted to bring up that same point, yeah.
Yeah, it's just why they're doing it. And you could do the white hat, he does it, or she does it because, you know, to take down bad guys, or to right wrongs, or, you know, mm-hmm. And we see that in a TV series like Leverage.
Right.
And the gray hat might be more selfish. They're not necessarily malicious. They, you know, they want to live a nice lifestyle. So they do but they don't really try to hurt people, so they'll siphon money off, you know, I don't know, a corporation or something like that, as opposed to robbing some grandmother of all her savings.
So in other words, the program they developed in Office Space, you know, the one that just like skimmed a fraction of a percent off every transaction.
Yeah, Superman 3, man. You gotta give credit where it's due.
Oh yeah. All right. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. And then, the Black Hat is they want to hurt people and destroy people, you know.
Rob them blood.
So, yeah, or they don't care. It's so indiscriminate that it is evil, you know. They don't care who they destroy.
No. Yeah, you bring that up, Lyle. That's kind of getting my mind flowing here, in that the skill set that a hacker has, it comes from a bad place. You know, it comes from breaking the law. It's like a professional safecracker. You know, they didn't learn those skills in school. They learned it from doing it in the real world, and doing it is something illegal. So even if you do play a good white hat hacker, it's good to think about the source of those skills. Where did they come from? What kind of a history do they have? Were they always white hat? Because it's pretty doubtful that they would be.
No, and I think also it'd be very difficult to do like a paladin analogy. It's like they're the paladins, because a paladin learns all of their skills within a very pure place, you know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So they associate with other paladins. Whereas, and that's a good point, I think, both of you, is that where did they learn these skills and who did they have to learn it from?
Mm-hmm.
So that can make your hacker have a really, really rich background, regardless of where they are now, where they came from. And it doesn't mean it has to be super dark. But.
I was going to say, you bringing up leverage kind of made me think of the first hacking movie that I remember watching, which was, Hackers, with Angelina Jolie in it, who I didn't realize was Angelina Jolie until, like, a while later. But, you know, kind of the main character in that, he's a decent hacker, but he was a criminal originally, you know, and got busted. And now he's just trying to, you know, be good. And kind of gets dragged back into it, and those skills get used again. But, as you said, Lyle, he got them from, you know, doing pretty much illegal things. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that movie. It wasn't... It's not real, but...
Yeah, exactly.
It was fun, which I think is the important thing.
Yeah, they jazzed up hacking to where it looked pretty interesting, with all those little, you know, animated screens
and log-on
names. Yeah, and you think about it now, and you're like, that technology is so horribly out of date, where they're talking about, like, whoa, this thing is like 256K of RAM, and you're like, geez, my phone does more than that. But
whoa, 100 baud, awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh my god, that'd be so slow. But, yeah, and real hacking is just, none of those graphics come up. It looks boring as hell. But, as you said, it's movie hacking, and it did what it needed to do.
Alright, so, we talked about, why they do it, and we're ending on did what they needed to do. So how did they do it? Like, what are different ways to hack?
Well, the main ways that I thought of when I was looking into it is just kind of going through the list is a brute force attack, where you and or your network of robots just try and hit a website with as many different variations of alphanumeric characters as you can possibly do. And I've seen some pretty impressive statistics on it. Some of the big botnets out there have hit things with something like 3 billion different passwords in a matter of 30 seconds, trying to get all the different combinations to go through. There's also DOS and DDoS, which stands for denial of service and distributed denial of service, where you try and flood a website with traffic and overload its information so it just crashes. That's when you see the big sites coming offline. I think it was Anonymous did it to Visa and MasterCard last year.
Yeah, I heard like eBay got hit as well.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, sorry to interrupt this, but because I read the same thing, you know, denial of service attacks, and I couldn't really see the point of that other than being completely malicious.
Because it's out there to screw a company.
Yeah, exactly. You can't really get any information when you do a denial of service attack. You just crash the system.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, but if you're talking about a company, then it's really harmful. My company that I work for, we sell almost entirely online. So we got hit by a DDoS, or rather our DNS got hit by a DDoS. And it took us offline for half a day, and that's a lot of money lost for us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's just embarrassing for a company too, especially, you know, if it's propagated by, you know, four or five teenagers working in a hacking group, and they're able to take down MasterCard. You know, that's a pretty big feat.
Yeah, I'm wondering if I'm just trying to kind of spin that into, you know, information. Where I guess something they could also, or something the hacker could also get is, you know, reputation. And as we said before, in the why do people do it? Well, some people do it to increase their own reputation. But I guess with the, especially with those denial of service attacks, you could do it to, you know, stain someone else's, you know, reputation.
You know? Mm-hmm. Could be a roundabout way to ransom it.
Right.
I mean, you could just threaten to keep doing it or extort money, sorry.
Yeah.
And you just keep doing it until they give in. Or like if, in the anonymous case, just to prove that they could do it and, you know, kind of threaten them and try to keep them in line.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, it's used as a kind of a defensive weapon as well. There's a couple of the big botnets out there. They operate at such a high level that if they detect some computer somewhere on the internet trying to research about the botnet or trying to take measures against it, they'll DDoS that computer specifically or in that entire network that computer's on and just shut them down. Mm. And it keeps people from, you know, trying to take down these botnets.
Right. Okay, just a second, I'd write this down. Don't Google botnet.
I was actually reading about it today in research of this episode. There's the biggest one in the world is called the Storm Worm because it's a worm program with the name Storm. But they say that there's maybe 2 million computers or more in this botnet, and they say that the raw processing power of all these computers outdoes that of any nation state in the world. They have this criminal organization, they don't know who, runs this Storm Worm botnet, has the most powerful computer in the world by far. And it automatically detects when people try to do research about Stormworm, and it'll just shut down their systems. It's to the point where people researching it are afraid to do so.
So in other words, if Chris cuts out halfway through this episode, he got hit by the Stormworm.
Could be.
Yeah, mention that a few more times, Chris.
You have to say it like this, Storm.
And let me just tell you, those Stormer guys, those guys are awesome. I'm totally for those guys.
White hats.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you brought up all those ways of doing it, Chris, because I just kind of said, during the research, you know, figured out, okay, well, it's detection, you know, and then the next step would be intrusion, obviously, you know. Maybe trying to find a vulnerability in the system, which is like a flaw or a weakness that's kind of built into the system, and then using an exploit.
Like what happened with Java?
Sorry, I don't know the Java hack.
Yeah, neither do I.
People hacked into Facebook because of something to do with Java. Java had a flaw in its code, and they just recently repaired it.
Yeah, that's right. They allowed a post through the URL. Yes.
Then there's also social engineering. And that's where, I mean, you actually saw that in the movie Hackers, where the, you know, if I remember correctly, where, you know, you call up and you trick the guy to get the password or something like that.
Right, right. I hadn't thought of that as being social engineering until you mentioned it. I just thought of it, wow, look, he had to get that guy's modem number, and gee, isn't that outdated? But,
that's true.
But I mean, I think that's the big thing nowadays is socialing, they call it, is calling up companies and making use of their poor customer service or just not realizing who you are and what you actually are going after and just giving out information that can be used to steal a network. I think that one works really well for games too, because it really allows the whole group rather than just the hacker to get in on the action, because there's the deal of impersonating people and sometimes accounts are tied to physical devices like phones, so you'll actually need the phone or the phone number, so you can try sneaking around and stealing that or going through trash and getting information. Not that that's a glamorous game feature, but...
No, but yeah, going dumpster diving is a way to get passwords or, you know, account numbers and do exactly what those people did. Combining
the non-tech with the tech really helps. I mean, even in the war games, you know, when he finds, like, the school's password, he knows where it is, like, where it's physically written down.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then accessing that, so then it just makes it easy for him to break in or to change the grades.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I definitely think social engineering is something to incorporate into your game if you want to make it more dynamic, unless you're playing a game where, you know, the Matrix or the whatever they call the hacking place or sorry, the net,
mm-hmm.
is like a very dynamic, you know, you're all virtual reality characters walking around.
Yeah, I think in a game that's kind of set in the real world, you know, modern era, well then, yeah, dumpster diving and doing that socializing, that would be, yeah, as you said, Lyle and Chris, a great way to incorporate the characters. But then if you get into a game, you know, where everybody has computer access all the time, you know, like Eclipse Phase, where everybody's essentially plugged into everything all the time, then you can still use it, but you wouldn't need it as much because everybody kind of has some level of computer skills.
Yes and no. I mean, things would come full circle. It's like the more you put online, the more people are going to want to keep offline.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be, whether or not it's a MacGuffin in your game or not, but there could be things that are kept offline that you need to bring to get something somehow. A code, yeah. A name, that then you bring back into the net world.
Well, doesn't that kind of get into like the movie Johnny Mnemonic, where the safest way to transfer information was in an actual person?
Yeah, oh, definitely. As soon as you said that, I was thinking of something else that might have a very similar dynamic where they revert all the way back to like almost like heralds, and they just throw them into ships, and they travel in, you know, faster than light. And I can't remember if it's because they can't travel that fast or because it's just safer to have the heralds just travel on the ships.
Right.
Because if you look at BattleTech, they have faster than light communication as well as faster than light travel.
Mm-hmm.
But then when that communication network goes down in parts of places, it's like a dark age. Even though they have all this high tech technology, they're so used to communicating instantly across the universe that just to lose that means that, you know, they don't know. You know, they revert back to kind of like a quasi medieval time.
Just with technology.
Not really. It's still more modern.
Except for these giant, like, 2-3-story tall mechs. Oh, my God.
Fire. Mecha.
Yeah. We've lost all our penicillin. Now, but we are talking about different games. And, we've mentioned Leverage, the TV series. And there's also Leverage the Game, which has some pretty interesting hacking rules. And you guys were mentioning Eclipse Phase.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The first game I ever played that had hacking rules in it was Cyberpunk 2020. So it's kind of my first love of that class of character. But man, those were terrible hacking rules.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, Artalsorian.
Yeah, I looked them up just for like research for this, and I'm like, holy crap! Wow, what's going on here?
Yeah, the problem with it is it's like a individual dungeon crawl, and I think actually you coined that term earlier, Wayne. The hacker has to go on by himself and do basically separate from all of the other players. And it's boring for the hacker. Well, not necessarily boring for the hacker, but it's boring for other players to wait. And then for the hacker to just sit there after he's done the hack. it's not good.
Well, can you give a bit more information though? Like why don't you like it?
Okay. Well, it's set up. Actually, I think you did the more research, Wayne, by all means.
Well, as Chris said, it is pretty much like a dungeon crawl, like the game master actually maps out the system in almost a series of corridors and rooms with like firewalls forming these walls of this little enclosure and this maze, and you know, choosing individual locations, almost like rooms, where the information is kept and what information is kept where, and then these little programs, you know, kind of like countermeasure programs, are on the map. Kind of like NPC monsters in a dungeon that the player has to either sneak past or fight to get the information. So, yeah.
The way they fight is even like an old magic user. They have a list of programs, quote-unquote, which worked kind of like Vancian spells, where you fire them off and they attack the other program, and then you've used that one for your run.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's a dungeon crawl that only the hacker goes on. So
sounds amazing. I don't know why you have a problem with that. Like, seriously. No, I'm not being ironic.
It actually was a lot of fun to play, but it was just a thing that it had to be completely separate from the other players. They didn't have the link up, so.
There's a big downside there, but the upside is it's different, you know, because a lot of the hacking rules out there are variations of extended actions.
Right.
You know, it's like hacking is a three-step process, so you will make three rolls.
Right.
So at least that was, you know, I can respect what was done there.
Yeah.
But I do think, yeah, it's a serious flaw that everybody's, you know, going to check out for about 30 minutes to an hour.
Right.
While the person does this.
Yeah,
there was always the kind of off session where you sit with a hacker before the other players show up, and you kind of run it that way. But you know, if you're relying on like the hacker to unlock a certain door at a certain time, then you have to make sure tie it up with what the characters are doing and then what the hacker's doing, and you can't really have any emergency situations. It was really hard to do.
I think regardless of the rules, is that how important is this hacking? Is it bypassing a door? Then let's just get this done quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's, you know, well, it's like in the movies, you know, if the person's like hacking a door code, if you will, and nobody wants to sit there and watch the guy go over and over and over trying to like find the right code.
Yeah.
But if it's trying to break into the mainframe of the main system and, you know, that's kind of like, you know, the be all and end all to the movie, then yeah, like spend a little time on it.
Yeah, I certainly don't disagree. And not having played Cyberpunk 2020, just having done the research, yeah, as you said, Lyle, nothing is wrong with the dungeon crawl approach, and it is different, apart from the giant flaw of having to be separate from the rest of the party and do it on separate time. But I guess the other thing, and you bringing up hacking the door reminded me of this, the game master kind of has to plan out where all the information is, or kind of like make it up on the fly. So, yeah, as Chris said, timing becomes a really big issue. You know, it might add tension, you know, because you're essentially trying to get to the end of this maze or a goal in the maze. And can the hacker get there and find the correct file before the rest of his team gets to the place where the door has to be opened? You know, and yeah, that could add tension. It could also be a nightmare. You know, like maybe the GM forgot to put in where the information for the corporate, you know, security cameras in the shower are that everybody needs, and then all of a sudden he has to put that in. You know, I mean, I was grasping at straws, but
I need those shower cams.
Yeah, I think the other kind of failing is that it needs a lot of prep by the GM to set up, which could be taxing. Probably would be taxing.
And actually, going off of what you mentioned there, Lyle, too, I don't want to advocate that the hacker shouldn't have their own time. They're a very specialist class, and if someone wants to play a hacker, then it's only fair to give them that experience, but just not at the expense of the other players.
Yep.
I was going to say, so in opposition to that, some of the other systems that we've looked at recently are Leverage and Eclipse Phase, and those have very different, and in the case of Eclipse Phase, my favorite hacking rules. So the way Eclipse Phase does it is it's actually very realistic. It kind of breaks up the difference between an exploit attack or a brute force attack. And also it keeps real how actual computer systems work and how actual hacking works, where you try to break in one role and you scan through the system in another role. And once you have broken into the system, you may face off against the system security, like a systems administrator or an artificial intelligence. It's a future game. But once you get through all those different layers, then you have a certain level of access. It can be like admin level access or security level or regular user access. And depending on what level you have, that's how much control you have over the system. Like, again, opening doors or turning on and off lights or, just erasing the information that you've created while you're going through.
Yeah, I do like how Eclipse Phase represents that. They have the number of different access stages. I think it's like, you know, hidden, covert, spotted, and locked. And, you know, hidden means the system doesn't know you're there, and you get a hefty bonus to pretty much doing anything. Covert means you're seen as a regular user and have regular user access and can do things. Spotted means, yeah, someone's targeted you or the system admin has targeted you for doing suspicious activity. And locked means they know you are there and you are a threat. And, of course, there's modifiers to your die roll. And I don't know. The thing I also like about the way Eclipse Phase does it is, once you have access to the system, yeah, you can do all this stuff with the system, which you have to attempt with skill rolls. If you fail the skill roll, your access gets downgraded, which is kind of like, I don't know, I like how that works. It's like, okay, you did something where you've notified the system that you shouldn't be doing this. and mm-hmm. the system is kind of starting to lock in on you. So, yeah, I like how there's kind of tension built in there. You know, failure mm-hmm. has real consequence other than just you didn't open the door or didn't find the correct file. It's, no, you didn't do it, and you tipped off the system. The clock's ticking down.
And it's graded, too, so it's not a pass-fail. Once you fail a roll, you're not kicked out of the system, but it kind of just downgrades you.
Yeah.
It's not actually specifically part of a system, but I like the setting for Eclipse Phase as well. It blends really well with a hacker, as you mentioned earlier, Wayne, because everyone and everything, including like basic appliances, like your scissors sitting on your desk, they're all linked into the network because they're all meshed items. So, it's a great system to play a hacker in, and I can't wait until the next time I get a chance.
Make sure you read the rules, otherwise you'll end up with people having 120% in the skill. Which means they
legit.
Can't fail.
That was legit.
I know it was, but that's pretty ridiculous.
And then the other one is Leverage.
No, I thought, again, Leverage was pretty good. It was very different from Eclipse Phase, and Leverage, using the Cortex system, is a very narrative system, so you're just kind of allowed to say, I'm a hacker, therefore I should be able to do this. Let's see if I kind of succeed. And I like that, too. But in the supplement, Hitters, Hackers, and Thieves, which Lyle argues is incorrectly named.
Because it starts with hackers.
Right. And I see what you're saying. But they
could have been called Hackers, Hitters.
All right. Take note, Margaret Weiss Productions.
Just saying.
But I think... No, the hacker section gives a pretty decent history of hacking and a pretty decent general overview of how it's done. And then it introduces these kind of extra abilities that you can say, you know, I'm a hacker, I should be able to do something special. And it adds tension to the game because, like, if you succeed on your roll, you get a free asset. And in the Cortex system, that adds an extra die, you know, to your rolls for the rest of the scene. But if you fail, the game master gets to add an extra complication for free. So
yeah, I like
again,
that about the Cortex system.
Yeah. And they kind of balance it by saying, okay, you have these four kind of special actions that you can use during the session, but you can only use each of them once, and only one per scene.
What I really like about the Leverage system is the attributes and hackers.
Yes.
Or what they've done is they've taken what you would, for the most part, they got hacker plus intelligence, and it explains how that works. But then they have, like, hacker and strength, and how that combination could work, or hacker and vitality, hacker and willpower.
Yeah. At first, hacker and willpower really threw me, so I'm like, why would it be willpower? And it's like, oh, it's for when you're leaving the system, and... Yeah, it's an act of will, because you want to just, you know, bug out and get out as quickly mm-hmm. as possible. But no, you have to stay, or you want to stay and make sure your tracks are covered. And, you know, yeah, I can see that being willpower, you know, or vitality is just, no, this is going to take a long time. You better start downing those Red Bulls, and do you have enough stamina and endurance to see it through, or are you going to give up?
And it's like doing a repetitive task, too, and I mean, that is hacking, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like the mixing and matching of abilities in that. So,
yeah,
that
absolutely.
Was really good.
And it's a fairly abstract system that it can kind of, even like doing regular things, can kind of seem to be a bit separate. So it really helps with hacking. Like you're doing something special.
Yeah.
That you can really play with and fiddle. It's like when we play other Cortex games. And it's fun. You play with the dice pools. And, you know, I think that can make something like hacking a lot of fun. Because you kind of want it to be, you know,
different,
like you're
manipulating
than what everyone
else something. Is doing.
And when you're actually physically manipulating something while you're playing the game, it just helps transport you into that world.
Mm-hmm.
So. Yeah, I was going to say, you also kind of want it to be, even though I guess we bemoaned the fact that it was kind of different for, you know, Cyberpunk 2020. And I think Shadowrun kind of has at least earlier editions had a similar thing where, you know, the hacker had to be very separate. But as you said before, Lyle, you kind of want that action to be different because it's different than what other people are doing, you know? And yeah, sometimes it's nice to have mechanics that say, no, okay, and now this action really feels different than what people are doing in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we should say like Shadowrun. I mean, Chris has compared the Shadowrun system as something similar to the Eclipse Phase system.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that has a pretty decent hacking system as well. And, you know, you got like different things that you can do, both different ways to access the system, and you make those rolls. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it uses kind of the extended action kind of idea, but mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe I'm good. Wrong, but I think that's more recent editions, because I think
looking at the fourth edition.
Yeah, I think I had the second edition handbook, or the second edition core book, and it seemed very similar to the Cyberpunk 2021, where it was just kind of a different state of reality, but the character could still, you know, move and attack programs and do things like that. But, and again, like, even though I was in high school, I remember kind of reading it and saying, great, how am I supposed to do this alongside of other people doing a run? It doesn't really seem possible. But.
Mm.
So, I mean, that's what's currently out there. But while we were talking about hacking, we're also thinking of different ways to kind of bring the hacker character into other settings, like a fantasy setting or a steampunk setting. And,
no puns,
you know,
about hacking those systems.
Oh,
you're punning again. All right.
I was disappointed that you weren't punning.
Hey, not everyone can be a dad like you, Chris. We're not contractually obligated to make dad jokes.
But with fantasy, I mean, you just take what a magic system does and say it's doing the same thing as a network or a computer system.
Mm-hmm.
And you have things. I mean, magic's often used for security, like locks. It's also used like for communication, you know, divination. So imagine like hacking into somebody's crystal ball through your own hacking spells. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, when you brought that up in an email earlier, wow, that just floored me. That's awesome. I love that idea.
Well, I mean, this might be a bit of a tangent, but it kind of bugs me that other people haven't thought of that or worked it into the system. You know, it's like, no, think about what magic is going to do to your system and think about what it offers. Because people are going to exploit that and people are going to, you know, use it for purposes that it wasn't intended. And so, yeah, if you have crystal ball communication with or divination spells, scrying spells, then of course people are going to figure out how to, like, piggyback on that signal or, you know, use those spells to gather information that wasn't originally intended.
Different systems have, like, the ley lines and things like that. I mean, those are things that you can incorporate. But I think what you said there, Wayne, is, like, and it's what we talked about before the episode, is, like, what does a hacker do, really, is they look for weaknesses and then they exploit them.
Right.
And, yeah, why shouldn't somebody who's really adept at magic not look for weaknesses that are in the system and exploit them?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you could have, like, white, you know, magic hackers who say, oh, well, you know, there's something wrong in this spell. Let me tell everyone about it, and then we'll fix it. You have, like, mm-hmm. you know, gray hat magic hackers who would sell that information or just, you know, give it to everybody. And then, yeah, black hat hackers will say, I know how to defeat this. And, well, maybe it's a bit, you know, kind of like gray. But, yeah, I'll sell it. I'm going to use that to my own ends.
Yeah. I think that to do a character like that, and I think it really is an amazing idea, you have to be a little careful to change up your magic system. Because, like, for example, in D&D, the spell Dispel Magic kind of takes care of all of those hacking things. You can shut down that force wall or anything, and it's only a third-level spell.
Yeah,
so,
and I agree with you, but that, to me, is the equivalent of turning off your computer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yeah, you can cast a spell magic, but it's going to kill everything. And maybe you have stuff up that you would rather keep on, and Dispel Magic is the last-ditch effort. I mean, you know, like on Shadowrun and, you know, Console Cowboys, they just say, whoop, time to jack out, and I lost whatever I have. That, to me, is what Dispel Magic would be in that system.
Yeah, that's where I was going with that, is that saying, you know, another side to it is, instead of just kind of shutting down or ruining the magic, there's also kind of the idea of turning the magic to work for you instead of against you or against its original user.
No, I mean, that's good. Yeah, or like piggybacking on their own spells. So if they're casting some sort of divination or sense spell, I mean, you can hack into that and you actually get the benefits. In addition to the user. So maybe they notice or maybe they don't notice.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, there was a joke about, I think it was like, what, Melf's Acid Arrow?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, you could if you where this is kind of like a more of a socially engineered style of hacking, where you're a very good reader of people's body language, and or you can lip read and all of that stuff. So you can pick up all the gestures and words that are needed to cast that spell. So you're actually stealing the spell.
Right.
Yeah.
I just thought of this now, but you had not joked, but you had said before, Lyle, that you know, like a magic hacker would be able to like read scrolls without opening them, magic scrolls, you know, without opening them. And
well,
we didn't
I wasn't
talk
joking,
about
actually. I was
no, that. And that's why I tried to say it again as and cut that part out. But I mean, sorry. But my point is, we didn't talk about it during real hacking. But like, there's all kinds of malware. And imagine a wizard shop that sells scrolls with a couple extra lines added. So when you cast that divination spell from that scroll, the guy who sold it, the guy who sold it to you sees what you see, because he's added a couple extra lines that lay people don't know are in there, you know? Mm-hmm.
And then you get porn pop-ups.
And then you get porn pop-ups. All right.
Sitting there talking to the king, and this illusory one pops up next to you. Hello.
I mean, of course, the big caveat for this is that if you're kind of running a more traditional fantasy game, then kind of the magic hacker is not really going to work. Mm-hmm. It has to be a world that kind of can support that. And that would be like a high fantasy world, a world that's very, very interconnected.
Right.
Yeah.
I forget what they're called, but wasn't there in like 3rd edition or possibly 4th edition like a prestige class? It was like a spell thief or something that wasn't really a magic user, but could somehow like through like a critical backstab or some other ridiculous means like steal spell points from other casters.
I don't remember the names of any of them, but in research I looked up some prestige classes in D&D. There were quite a few. I think there's one called like a cloistered cleric or a cloistered priest or something like that, whose turning attempts worked as counterspells. And there was, I think it's the Abjuration School of Magic, where that contains all of the dispel magic and counterspells and things like that, that if you specialize in that in the right way, that you could play a, not necessarily a hacker, but kind of a spell ruiner.
Well, I can't remember. It was like a spell stealer where, you know, you hit a wizard and you could steal like first level spells or something.
Mm, yeah. I don't doubt it.
There's the spell filcher.
Oh, maybe that's what it was, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, there could have been a spell thief as well. To be honest, I haven't played either one, so.
To be honest, interesting.
But there were so many prestige classes that you're like, yeah.
Yeah.
That really, you could say, wasn't there a prestige class? Yes.
Probably it's like rule 35 on the internet. If you can think of it, there's a prestige class for it.
Yeah.
Porn illusionist.
Yeah, of course there would be. Yeah, the fact that like that's not in any of the settings, you know, kind of takes away a bit of the reality.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's honestly, all they would be doing.
Exactly. Exactly. Hey, I have this illusion spell. Yeah.
Play it again.
I'm all out of spell points. I need to sleep. I can only cast 3 spells a day.
So it would be what? Like silent image, whatever makes sound and something else, yeah.
Oh no.
Hey, imagine the like the prophet like a yeah, a wizard could do with that.
Yeah, let's imagine that.
Yeah.
I am.
Everyone, let's take a moment here and
And then, of course, like steampunk, so you could have like a steam hack, or even if you have like a biotech, or I always think of the space gods from Torg, where everything is all like bioorganisms, and you know, as soon as you have that, I mean, whatever their main network or main system is that's the thing that the hacker tries to exploit, and in a biotech or bioorganism world, then perhaps they're using viruses and bacteria and things like that. In steampunk, they can be manipulating punch cards. There could be cogs. There could be actually manipulating the steam.
Mm-hmm.
And Wayne had a good idea how they would do that. It was like using the pipes.
Yeah. I imagine, like when you said, you know, a steampunk hacker, I imagine, okay, what would their tools be? And it'd just be like this guy with a huge belt of, you know, various lengths of brass tubing and little drills so they could, you know, tap into the network and you know, pipe the steam to different places for their own ends.
Well, it's like Captain Crunch. I was thinking more like a Captain Crunch, where they use the, like, somehow the steam is, how much steam goes through determines, you know, what happens.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. So they're manipulating the kind of the pressure of the steam using, like, some sort of little pump and things like that. But, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, imagine, like, some big steam armor, but you shunt steam from one leg to the other so they can only use one leg.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking that. Or, They'd have, like, some little, you know, apparatus where, yeah, they'd, like, maybe, like, a security camera or some kind of, like, tracker. You know, they'd kind of, like, tap in illegally to the main steam valve, you know, siphon steam off of their own ends.
I'd love to do a steampunk or a fantasy where the big bad is a group of hackers for it. It's just because it would be so unexpected, you know, especially with the fantasy idea, the magical hackers. That's such rich opportunities in that.
Yeah, or kind of like Lyle said, you know, with like science fiction or biohacks. Like, I know I harp on this setting a lot, but Eclipse Phase kind of has that, where it's far enough into sci-fi where you actually have cyber brains or completely robotic brains, which are, for all intents and purposes, a computer, and people can exploit those. And like one of the things in the setting, it's called a basilisk hack. And the idea is like the big bad, like Titan AIs, like these evil AIs, figured out, hey, the human brain has these, you know, vulnerabilities and exploits. Kind of like watching Pokemon on TV gives kids seizures. They figured out, okay, a specific series of flashes can exploit, you know, bugs in the human brain. And you can actually, in that setting, get viruses and kind of have your brain rewired by having either sound or light or other stimulus kind of, you know, bombarding you. So that was kind of scary.
Well, I think, you know, I mean, people getting stuff added to their brains, you know, so if they add in hardware, like just regular hardware, then that opens up the possibility of hackers jumping. So imagine that, you know, like you're hacking into people's bodies and you take control of them that way. So
yeah, if you've ever not seen it before, I very much recommend the Ghost in the Shell, the TV series. They're very, very good, and they deal with a lot with that, like cyber brains and people taking over other people's bodies. It's very good.
Yeah, or just kind of like we said, hackers deal with information. So, you know, in your setting, maybe you don't have to go and, you know, beat the confession or beat the credit card number out of someone. It's like, nope, you can remote access their brain and, you know, page through their brain to find the information you're looking for.
And we're not actually that far from it in real-world technology.
Yeah.
I don't even have a tattoo. I don't think I'm going to get something installed in my brain.
No, they had these new scans where they were reading people's dreams. They were able to kind of decode some of the electronic images pulsing through the brain, and it wasn't clear by any means, but they were kind of putting together images of what people were seeing in their dreams.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty freaky.
When you think of, you know, I thought about Google Glasses.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you hack into somebody's Google Glasses, and you can control what they see.
Yeah. Before you said that, Lyle, I was thinking of the kind of like implanted cameras that are, you know, directly attached to people's optic nerves to allow people who are going blind to see in some limited capacity.
Yeah.
Whereas like the Google Glasses, you know, that's not connected to your brain. You could just take that off. But some of those hardware things, nope, those are connected. And yeah. If you can hack into that and mess around with those connections, yeah.
Well, the thing is, my idea didn't involve picking on blind people. Yours did.
Fine.
You're just cruel, Wayne.
Well, apparently Lyle is a gray hat, where I'm a black hat. All right. I think I'm blind people.
Yeah, I can't wait till they get those exoskeletons and we can hack them and make them walk off cliffs.
I wasn't going to go that far. I was just going to have them carry my stuff when I went shopping.
Yeah. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of Rogue's Hackers. And, of course, remember, I mean, start from the motivation, because that will determine whether you play a white, gray, or black hat hacker. And of course, we recommend you choose the white or gray. No, why would we recommend that? No, choose whatever.
No, I think what we would say is, whatever you choose, make it matter.
That's right.
Yeah. Good words, Wayne. Good words. All right, well, thank you for joining us again on Out of Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleradhands.com, idleradhands.com. You can listen to the episodes right there on the website or stream them through iTunes or Stitcher or download them off of DriveThruRPG. You can also contact us by following us on Twitter or off of Facebook or just send us an email because we always love hearing from all of you. Thanks, and see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
DriveThruRPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week, and we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. DriveThruRPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.
You know, it's like when we play like Marvel Superheroes or Marvel Heroic role playing.
Mm-hmm.
And did I say Margaret or Marvel?
I believe you said Marvel, but you can say it again just so I can edit a clean one.
Okay. Well, it's like when we play Marvel.
You did say Margaret that time.
This time.